I guess we'll start with roll call, and everybody is here. And next, I'd like to ask the council, Eric has come and asked that he could approach the council about Christmas decorations, it looks like.
Yeah, stuff for Christmas decorations and so forth.
Okay, he'd like to visit with the council. Is that okay with the council? Because he's not on the agenda, so I have to get your approval. Yes?
Yep.
Okay, Eric, we're going to put you first then.
I'm supposed to be backing Sean Mogan up, but he isn't here tonight.
Oh.
Okay, I'm Eric Morgan. Thank you for allowing me to talk. We're looking in the future of redoing all our Christmas decorations that are at the park and the ones that are in storage that we can't bring out because they're just not able to use them. One of the things we're looking at is it's going to take about 12 sheets of half inch plywood, 3 sheets of quarter inch plywood, or 3 quarter inch plywood. Painters, artists, carpenters. I tried in March to get this going. I didn't have any response since the article in the paper. I've had about 10 phone calls. What we're doing is one of the big projects we want to do is rebuild the sleigh and the reindeer. The reindeer will be out of half inch plywood, and the sleigh will be out of the 3/4 inch. Now, everybody, everywhere you go, you can get your pictures taken with Santa Claus. How many people have a setup where they can actually take pictures of their kids or themselves in Santa's sleigh with the team of reindeer in front of them and being able to hold the reins? That's one of the things we're looking at. The runners for that are $300 to have them built over here at Othello Welding. And so we want to come back in January with a better idea of exactly what we're going to be asking for. The Chamber of Commerce is putting up $250. That'll get us started at replacing some of those and see how big of a work party we actually have turned out. I've had some people saying, you know, I can do the painting, but I can't cut a piece of wood. Others are willing to do the woodwork, but they can't paint. So we are looking at replacing our decorations during the daytime. If you get a chance, go by and take a close look at everything that's hanging on the gazebo, the lighted works that are in the park. That stuff is, that tinsel and stuff on there should have been replaced years ago. We need to replace it with good tinsel. And this is all going to cost us some money, not a great amount. But we're going to be coming back in January with a better idea of what it's going to cost us and hopefully be able to set up some type of a budget. One of the things I wanted to bring up is if you've noticed, the lights are up this afternoon. The McDonald's crew was over there doing it. Fernando has been buying the lights for the last several years, last 5 years that I know of, to keep that parking lit up. It needs to stop. I know he's doing it out of the goodness of his heart and stuff, but we as a city should be supplying the lights, not him. So when you go in there and have coffee, if he's in there, make sure you thank him for it, because it's he needs to know that we as a city appreciate what he's doing. Okay, that pretty much covers what I'm looking at here. The sleigh itself, without the runners on it, is going to be about 6 feet long, 30 inches wide, and about 39 inches high. That way it can still be moved in and out of the storage door down there. That's the dimensions on it right now. It's made out of a wire frame. I want to make it out of plywood so that people can sit in it and have their pictures taken with the reindeer. So this is basically what I wanted to bring up, that we're going to be looking to the council for money probably in January so that we can get the people together to start it. We just need to have people say, yeah, we can do this. Let's go for it. And if we've got the funds to work it, then I know I know there's some people that are willing to step in and help. I also gave Tim a copy of my notes here, so you'll be able to discuss it. But I'm open for questions anytime somebody wants to call me.
Is there any questions?
Or volunteer to help.
There you go. Any questions for Eric?
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Oh, wait a second.
Just a comment. I hate to be the Grinch here, but remind council, and you can advise, you're here representing the Chamber of Commerce, correct?
The Chamber of Commerce is kicking in $250 to get us started.
Well, the city just kicked in $4,000 to the Chamber of Commerce by taking over the fireworks. That's $4,000 they planned on spending on fireworks that they won't have to in 2012. So
I wish you'd have taken part of that $4,000 and kicked it into the old hotel so we can stay above board.
Well, it didn't
we need it down there too. Not to mention the museum board I'm on too.
No, we'll pass that on to the chamber. They got $4,000 bonus for 2012 they can use for Christmas decorations, and they can be darn lucky I'm not going to be on council in 2012.
Are you a member of the chamber?
No.
Well, get on there and put these words in for us. All right, thank you.
Well, thanks for coming, Eric.
Anything else?
Any other questions? Okay, 2.01, updated comprehensive plan. Daryl?
Thank you, Mayor. Members of the council, good evening. For the record, Daryl Piercy, your city planner. Tonight we're going to briefly, and I use the word brief purposely, go over the basic elements of the comprehensive plan, what's transpired to date. I'm going to be somewhat bold and provide a homework assignment and ask that the council have the ability to provide some feedback on elements of the plan specifically in advance of our next meeting. So first let me give you just a little background of how we've gotten to where we're at today. About 2 years ago, it actually started in early 2009, we began to have discussions with the Planning Commission as to the current status of the comprehensive plan for the city of Othello and what steps we need to take as a community to bring the comprehensive plan up to date and to have it reflect the policies and goals of the city for the next 20 years, over the next 20-year planning period. So we began those discussions and that educational effort, if you will, many months ago, almost 2 years. Since that time, the Planning Commission has very systematically taken sections of the comprehensive plan and looked at those and reviewed policies and goals for the city, and also worked on developing an overall mission statement for the city. To really set forth kind of that tone of the direction that the city wants to go over the next 20 years. It was done in stages. It was done element by element. And so each piece kind of got discussed, set aside, and we went on to the next piece. So we recognized as we went through that process with the Planning Commission that things such as numerical values, populations, capital facilities plans, all were going to change over the course of the review period of the plan. And so, to be perfectly honest with you, the focus of the efforts of the Planning Commission was on policy and goals and the direction and the tone of the document rather than numerical values that really you will be plugging in at the end of this process to reflect the most up-to-date numerical values that we'll have available. So the first step in this process for the Planning Commission, and also the first step in this process for the council, will be to look through those policies and goals and the vision statement for the city. Now, as council members, you have the opportunity to really set forth what is the vision and the goals and the policies for the city for the next 20 years through the review and careful consideration, and ultimately the adoption of your comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan that you adopted as a city in the 90s, which is the current comprehensive plan in place, and we provided a copy of that for you in your packets, really does not meet the requirements of a city in today's environment. And I say environment both in terms of the natural environment, but also the political environment, and more importantly, the economic environment. One of the first things we see when, as a planner, when a prospective business comes to town and starts talking about land use and rules and regulations and how the city reacts to proposals, one of the first things they ask to see is the comprehensive plan. And 9 times out of 10, if they've done their homework, they've already reviewed the comprehensive plan before they've come and talked to us. And the reason that's become the norm for businesses who are looking to relocate is because that is the way most communities now in the state of Washington have set their agenda and their requirements and their priorities over the course of the next 20 years. And businesses look to see whether or not that focus and that direction that's provided in the comprehensive plan is in fact consistent with the company's goals and values and direction that they'd like to associate with the community that they would locate in. So it's become a very important tool from the standpoint of site locations and economic development, not just for the city, but it's become more importantly a tool for business, because they judge a community by its cover, by its comprehensive plan. And they will make decisions before they even come and talk to city staff about whether or not that sounds like a good fit or not for them. And so that's why the vision and the policies and the goals that are outlined in your comprehensive plan become extremely important. And you want to make sure that you're sending the message that's important to the community, but it's also the message that you want to send out to those that perhaps might want to locate a business in Othello. And that's the first place they're going to look. So you'll see as we go through this, the plan actually will ultimately contain 7 very distinct elements. And those are land use, housing, capital facilities, utilities, transportation, economic development, and open space and recreation. There's also a section in the comprehensive plan that talks a little bit about performance standards, and that it really falls under the elements of capital facilities, but that's one area that I want you to be very aware of and to spend a great deal of time. And I hope that we also get a great deal of feedback from those city services and those directors leading up those city services in terms of, are those realistic standards for the city to adopt? And I'll give you an example. In the plan, there are performance standards for a police response, for example. And that is set for a particular number of minutes for a response on average to every call that comes into the city. And the question will become, are we staffing our police department adequately enough to continue to ensure that we meet that goal? And so when you set that goal, you also have to understand that it potentially will have long-term budget ramifications for you as a council. Because if in the comprehensive plan you're establishing a goal for a 4-minute response time, then as the city grows and you expand urban growth areas and incorporate those into the city, you're going to have to recognize that that comes with additional costs in order to continue to meet those service standards. So it also becomes a tool for the city to be able to predict future budget needs. And it's those standards are set forth in a number of the services that the city provides, and the police department was only an example. There's standards for water quality, there's standards for sewer capacity, there's standards for parks, number of acre parks per 1,000 population. As we contemplate how much additional park area the city might need over the course of the next 20 years and to begin to try to plan for that, this document will give you the guidance as to how many acres you should be planning for. Now, we have recently just had released the census numbers for the city that are actually in a format that we can now utilize and begin to offer some projections on. We'll also be receiving additional information before your process is completed from the State Office of Financial Management in terms of what the official projections for the city of Othello will be in terms of growth and the population that we'll be looking at. But in very general terms, I would suggest to you that we're looking at the need to accommodate a population that will be at least twice the size of the current Othello in the next 20 years. And that represents some pretty significant challenges, both in terms of your infrastructure needs, land area that you'll need to incorporate and encompass to be able to serve that population. I think if I remember the analysis, the preliminary analysis that we conducted for the Planning Commission, we'd be looking at the need for at least an additional 120 acres of residentially zoned land. And that doesn't include the additional land that you'd need for roads, streets, alleys, parks, and then the accompanying commercial and industrial areas that would be associated with that population growth. So there are some very significant issues to consider as you move over the course of this process and look ahead over the next 20 years of planning. Because it has very deep embedded roots in almost everything you as a council and future councils are going to be trying to achieve on behalf of the citizens of the city of Othello. Now, you should actually feel very fortunate. If I was in your position, I would be elated that my time on the council actually has this opportunity. It really is a significant challenge for you and gives you, really, I think, a significant amount of leverage and power to shape how the city's going to look over that 20-year period. So with that, one of the things that we are going to need some immediate feedback on from the council is those areas that deal with the goals and policies that are contained within each of those seven elements. Now, when we did this at the Planning Commission, we recognized that this was a big bite to take from the apple. It's like eating most of the apple all in one sitting. So if you'd like to break that down and do it in more manageable segments, we can certainly do that. It will take additional time if we approach it that way. Or if you choose, we can get our arms around all seven elements, take a look at those policies and goals, and be prepared to specifically address and talk about each one of those at your next study session, which we intend to follow up with this on your study sessions, at least, I would suspect, for the next 3 to 4 months. But it would not be uncommon if the council at this level and at this amount of detail took more months than that. Again, we worked 18 months with the Planning Commission to get to the point where we're at today. So I'll look to you for some guidance on how you'd like us to proceed, but I will suggest to you that this taking all seven elements in one shot is a pretty monumental effort. And you may feel more comfortable going section by section, because when you begin to focus just on one section, you can really get in and sort of dig in a little bit on some of those policy issues to make sure that truly reflects the direction that you as an individual council member want to go forward with. Again, I know it's hard to do, and there are some errors in terms of some of the numerical values in this document that you have before you as a draft. Particularly in the population, we had just finished an analysis at the Planning Commission. It did not get in the Planning Commission's final draft, and that's why it's not in yours currently tonight. We'll be bringing that forward as a staff to you very soon. But I didn't want to alter in any way that the document that the Planning Commission had in front of their hands before it came to you. We'll bring that information later and make those adjustments. But again, the numerical values are something that we will use our last one or two meetings in this document to review and to actually incorporate, because we want to make sure that those numbers are fresh. There's a couple of other areas that are going to be referencing documents that you've already adopted. One of those is your Parks and Recreation Plan that you have adopted. Now, based on your analysis of going through your policies and goals, you may want to revisit that plan just to make sure it continues to be consistent with the goals you're now going to establish. But you've adopted that plan, it's pretty fresh, and we should be able to just reference that in this document. The same is true with your capital facilities plan. You adopt a revised capital facilities plan each year, and there's no reason to have that as part of the nuts and bolts of this. We'll just reference those kinds of studies that you've already accomplished, so that if you need to make changes to those, you can do so outside of the confines of the comprehensive plan, which is a much more cumbersome process to make revisions to. One last thing I want to add before I respond to any questions or have discussion in terms of how you want to proceed with this process is that the Growth Management Act in Washington State affects most counties and cities throughout the state. It does not affect and is not required in Adams County and therefore in the city of Othello. However, you'll notice as you read through this document, we do reference the Growth Management Act, and at times we take policy language from the Growth Management Act, and that was done very purposefully. It's identified clearly that we're not held hostage to the tenets of the Growth Management Act, because there's some things, frankly, that I don't think would work well in the city of Othello. But there are some basic planning concepts that have come forward out of that process that I think are important to incorporate into this document for the single reason that it has become the expectation from those, again, in the business community as they look to a community for potential locations. They want to see that standard format. Predictability has become very important. And if they can pick up a document and it's the same format and it's predictable with other documents and they can make comparisons across the board, apples to apples, it makes for a much easier effort on their part to take a look at Othello. So that's why we formatted it kind of based on that framework of the Growth Management Act, but recognizing that we're not required to conform to all of the tenets of that act, and in fact, this document does not. So, but the framework is very similar to one you might find in any city in King County or Yakima County. It gives you that basic framework so people know where to look in the document for the information that they want to obtain. Any questions to this point?
So you're wanting to do this on workshops. Do we want to take two areas per workshop? Does that sound good to the council?
I think we should break it up and look at it.
Two of the areas, like you said, there's seven that you want to review, correct? And then probably
right.
Some other stuff after that. Daryl, right?
What I envision is we'd go through each of the policy documents, policy elements, and the goals. Once we were able to get through those and have full agreement that these are going to be the policies and goals, then we come back and plug in those numerical values, reference the other documents that are going to be part of this, and then have perhaps two workshops dealing specifically with that kind of wrap-up information and those population projections. That's when we'll bring out the map and start talking about the areas where Othello is going to grow, because that is an exercise that the Planning Commission went through, and they have provided recommendations in terms of areas and directions and zoning where the city would grow to. And so that will be kind of that last effort, once we know all the numerical values, to set the map up in a manner that's consistent with the policies that you develop and whether or not you agree with the Planning Commission's recommendation for that mapping.
So it sounds like we'll go with two then,
okay,
starting January, I suppose.
And I'm going to even suggest 2.5. If we could look at the mission statement, which isn't very long, it's pretty short. So focus on the mission statement, which is early in the document, and then specifically deal with the land use section and the housing section. And again, we're looking at the policies and goals that are contained within each of those sections to ensure that those policies are something that you feel reflects and represents the requirements, needs, and desires of the citizens of the city of Othello.
Sounds good to everybody, it sounds like. And tell the Planning Commission, thank you for all their hard work with the council.
Yeah, they did put in a lot of time on this. The one thing that I think was the most disappointing for the Planning Commission was they often did it in a room with just themselves and Bob present. And to have additional public input on something that is this valuable to the future of the city, I think was a disappointment from their perspective. So that's one of the reasons why I think this additional very thorough review of policies and goals is important at the council level, because we didn't get a lot of input on those from the general public. We want to make sure that those reflect the direction and desires of the city.
Okay, thank you, Daryl.
Thank you.
I had a chance to read through it this weekend, and I really like the direction that it's headed. I like some of the goals, and it pretty much lays it out, responsibilities of the city too and stuff in there. I did find some errors with numbers and stuff like that in there. I could give you those tonight, or I could start to lay them out when we start going over these.
If you however you would like to do it, if you want to just list those and provide those to us, that would be fine. I think I know which ones they are, because I think we're having proofed this a couple of different times since it left the hands of the Planning Commission. I know that we have some significant modifications to make in the population numbers and those numerical elements. There's a couple of references to Grant County that are inappropriate in that section.
Yes.
However, later in the document, there's some references to a cooperative planning with Grant County that I think are very important, particularly when it comes to the transportation element of the document, where we need to reach out and ensure that our planning is consistent with what's happening in other transportation spheres, so that we're providing sort of a seamless transportation grid, including transit. So I recognize that there are some issues that we need to clean up, and again, part of that was done as a result of not having the numbers available, but the other part was done because we took pieces at a time and kind of brought the whole thing together as a whole at the very end. So apologize for that, but any input you have would be appreciated.
I wonder, do we want to just bring this up as we're going through? Because if three of us have the same notice, it's just easier when we're talking about it. You know what I mean? And it's not three, four people come in on the same thing to Daryl or whoever. And you know, maybe why don't we just do it as we're going through, and you keep your note posted like
and,
that.
And what I intend to do is send out a new population section before your meeting the next month, so you'll have that to review. Now that you've seen the document that was forwarded from the Planning Commission, I'm at a lot higher comfort level to be able to propose modifications and make changes and corrections. So I appreciate your patience on that.
And tell them thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, Planning Commission request review itinerant vendors, OMC. Daryl, don't go too far.
Again, thank you, Mayor. At the last Planning Commission meeting, once the Planning Commission put the gavel down and on their discussions for the comprehensive plan, I asked the council if they had any other questions or any other issues they'd like to address. And the questions came forward as kind of this follow-up to the comprehensive plan, but they really were outside the issue of the comprehensive plan. A couple of questions dealt with some traffic issues and placement of stop signs and some other things. But the one that seemed to be of real interest and concern to the Planning Commission was the issue of itinerant vendors and food facilities on a temporary or a long-term basis, but not in a brick-and-mortar type situation. Taco carts, I guess, is another way to describe those. There was a concern expressed by the Planning Commission members, I think universally, that they felt that there was too many and that perhaps they weren't being appropriately placed, and from an appearance standpoint, were not a good representation of the business community of the city of Othello as you drove into the, you know, the main areas coming into town. And you may recall that several years ago the city took on the issue of those merchants and placed a number of restrictions on those, and those are being applied. For example, there are no itinerant merchants allowed along Main Street, but they are allowed along First and along Broadway. And so the Planning Commission is merely requesting that they have an opportunity to revisit that issue based on kind of this historical application of the code as it was revised, and to at least examine whether or not the code as it's currently written is working the way it was intended, or if there needs to be some modifications or adjustments to that code that could better reflect their intent at the time of their recommendations regarding that issue. So they have requested from the council direction to open that issue, revisit that issue, to see how the current code is functioning now that it's been in place for a few years, and whether or not there's a need to recommend or suggest any modifications or changes to that section of the code dealing with that use.
Okay.
So they'd be seeking council approval to be able to take on that task.
How's the council feeling that?
You know, we really tackled this issue a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
we did.
That's why we didn't see him on Main Street. Unfortunately, the city's been going through a cultural change the last 20 years. And we're seeing a lot more Spanish restaurants, Mexican restaurants. I believe we got 5 of them down the street. Your taco wagons, I think we got 6 of them. 3 of them down Broadway, 3 of them down First Street. To me, it's part of free enterprise. I know they're very heavily regulated by the health department. We have some very tight restrictions on them too. I believe they should be fully mobile, not be able to bring their van in, set it up, put a little shelter to put a picnic table or something underneath it. I believe they need to be mobile. But if you take a kind of a look in the trend of what's going on now, these mobile food wagons is becoming a big thing now. You're starting to see a lot of bigger cities starting to encourage them, and they're bringing a different variety of different products and stuff. And eventually we might see one of those or a couple of them down the road. And that's why I want to be careful on how we restrict it. Like I said, unfortunately we went through a cultural change, and that's why we got 6 taco ones. When you get so many of those, I believe economics will eventually take care of part of them, because if they're not selling, they're not going to be in business very long. So I think it'll take care of part of that issue that we have. And I have no problem with the Planning Commission looking at it. I just want to be careful on what we do for future ones that possibly come in and have different varieties and other things that's possibly different.
Yeah, anything that they come up with will come back to council.
Yeah.
So everybody knows that. Maybe nothing. But are you interested in letting them review that? Or?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay. Go ahead then.
That's a yes. Thank you.
Sounds like a yes for reviewing it. Okay. Thank you, Daryl. Guama, Paul Stoker, you want to come address us on that? And thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me here. I'd like to recognize Roger Hartwig in the back of the room, as he is the Adams County Commissioner, sits on the Guam Executive Board. Bill Schlegel, who lives here in Othello, is the citizen member of the Groundwater Management Executive Board. And by the gracefulness of the city, we usually meet here in these chambers once a month on the fourth Thursday, except for this month we're having it this week. So. Didn't want to do it during Christmas. Anyway, I'm here for 3 specific things. I will entertain any questions at the end you wish. The water issues are very, very extensive. The first thing that I wanted to speak to you about is this document. It's titled the A Work Plan. And the point that I'm bringing that to you here today is that during the last legislative session, we were funded by request from our executive board and the county commissioners to do a recharge assessment for each of the 25 cities within the 4 county region. Othello was one of those. We will be contacting each city independently for retrieval of information we don't already have. This is in Othello's case. We've already been working with their public works over the years. And trying to provide a recharge assessment of your city. In the case of what we've told you before, probably an indication of what your options are and how long you have at each open interval you have right now. We've contracted with the consulting firms that currently providing engineering services for your city and the other cities throughout the, and they are under contract to aid us to finish this assessment process. The assessment will be done probably by June, and this work plan is a summary of the results that will be given to you in June. Okay, any questions on that to start with? I just want to let you know that we'd be contacting your staff, and as we will all the cities, and pursuing that. And what you're seeing on the board is recreations of the large model that we have created. This is just for your viewing pleasure, I guess. It might bring up more questions than it answers, but it just gives you some idea of what the model can look like in all different layers. And I'm sorry if that big vision size looks a little blurry, but anyway, that is the large view of the model we have currently. Second item is this paper. Starts with the word general review. This involves the city of Othello. Because we are doing an assessment on the cities, the Office of Columbia River Executive Derek Sanderson, about 2 months ago, roughly, asked us to do an evaluation of the economic impacts of the current options facing the six cities that are surrounding the Odessa area. And the summation for this particular paper is on the last page, page 31, table 18. There is a small couple paragraphs in there on the city of Othello's current issues. You won't want to read it at your later, but table 18 gives you a summary. To give you some idea of what this means is that they ask us if each of these cities, hypothetically, were to lose their potable water supply where they're currently getting recharged at the moment, what would their options be? And the options are generally categorized into three directions. You can go deeper. You can actually, in many cases, go up shallower and get into rechargeable water. Or you can use surface water. And so what you have here, you'll see in table 18, deep conversion, going deeper, and the shallow conversion and the surface conversion, and you'll see that Othello is next to last. What happens in each of these scenarios is that the water that is deeper, shallower, and in the surface all do not meet potable drinking standards. All sources of water available to you do not meet potable drinking standards. That means that you would have to treat it. Simple as that. And these figures roughly reflect the capital cost and the annual cost to build a treatment facility using the documentation you currently have in your 20-year comp plan. These are very large numbers. They're not meant to scare you totally to death, because remember, they were designated just for the purposes of addressing the question the environmental impact study requires for the Bureau of Reclamation, assuming that they don't do anything with the large pumpers to the east of us. So, in the Othello scenario, the first column, $200,000, suggests in the next few years, while you stay in what I describe as the potable zone, it's about how much it's going to average cost you to maintain pumps, recondition wells. I think you sort of know that because you've been spending money like that. It's an estimation for next X number of years until you get to the point where you make a decision, I just can't stay in these zones any longer. And you may actually be closer to that than just about anybody due to fluoride concerns. If you choose to go deep and you want to replace all of your current supply, the actual capital cost to go deeper and build a treatment facility is suggested at $22 million with a $1.1 million annual fee to maintain it. Does that make sense to you, how that works? Okay, and you go on to shallow conversion, and if you read the Othello portion of it, shallow conversion for you is not really an option. You don't really have a sustainable shallow, I mean, it means that your wells will be less than 150 feet deep. And that's probably a 10-gallon minute well. You just couldn't replace your supply with what, 1,500 wells or however many it would take to do that. So even though the number's in there, it's impractical. As you can see, $102 million is used, wouldn't work. The surface conversion is the projected capital cost for you to connect to the current Columbia River water supply, probably at O'Sullivan, would be my guess, or some combination of summertime use and winter storage facilities. It also would be a potential if you were to use aquifer storage and recovery, ASR, where you put the water down in the summertime, use out of the canal, and in the wintertime you pull out of the aquifer where you stored it. So there you're looking at a $36 million number with a $900,000 per year cost. These numbers were provided to the Bureau of Reclamation for their economic evaluation. They're not meant to scare you. They're not meant to be actually a prophecy. They're just an indication of what your options generally are and what the complications might be if you wait, let's just say 10 or 12 or 15, or 10 years or whatever, and you're left with no ingenious alternative that hopefully someone can figure out an alternative, which that's another issue. The third item that I have is called the future role of the Guama. About 2 weeks ago, county commissioners met in Bellevue, and I was asked to survey the cities that I'm visiting. You are one. The current work that the groundwater management area is doing has been subsidized, funded by the state and feds for the last 15 years, about $16 million. Most of you know that's not a very good source anymore. So the question is the original way to build a groundwater management area is to declare an aquifer protection area first, which holds with it a funding source of $5 to $10 per household for funding. And so the county commissioners have asked me to survey, are you acceptable of that concern, and consider to work on issues for our groundwater through this mechanism or not? And you certainly can say no to new taxes, in which case next Christmas I won't be doing this anymore. That was what I would ask you as a council to consider. Should I report back to them that you are favor, opposed, or don't know what to do? One or the other. How's that? That's my three items of business. You can ask me any other questions if you like. Seeing none, I guess you don't have any.
No, that you were too quick on that.
Yeah, that was quick.
I'm well practiced. I have many cities and many counties to visit. No, I would be glad to answer any questions you have, any subject.
Should I go?
Well, yeah.
The first one, I understood you on the deep conversion for Othello. It's listed at $22 million. Mm-hmm. That we'd have to do a water treatment plant. Did I understand that wrong? Or
yes.
If we go deeper, we got to treat it?
Each of the options would require a water treatment plant. Yes. But the options also include capital costs for drilling the wells and the physical infrastructure to connect them also.
No, I don't have a water treatment plant now. Why do I have, if I go deeper, do I have to put one in?
Because the water really stinks down there. and you, given the way the Department of Health is going right at the moment, you may have to start treating water anyway because the fluoride levels argument is moving down and you would be in violation of your current levels if that's adopted. I can't speak to yes or no, but the fluoride is the first trip for you, but the water below where you're at has way more than fluoride in it. Some of it is yellow and takes paint off your car. So that would be, and you also notice in here that it says 20-year annualized scenario for the deep one, whereas the others are over 40 years. And the reason for that is that our suspicion is that the life of the deeper layers would only be about 20 years. So you'd only gain 20 years on your investment.
You also referenced the Eastern deep well pumpers. I'm assuming you're referring to farmers.
Yes.
I'm pro farmer. I don't want to misunderstand that. But has there been anybody that has been forced or voluntarily shut off the wells for farming in light that they may be depleting water that goes to the cities?
In response to the question, the way you phrased it, no. But I can phrase it another way. Have there been farm use reductions because of loss of static? Yes. Approximately 50% of the capacity of the deep pumpers east of the East Loe Canal has been lost already. And there are a significant number of inoperable wells already and fields that don't have full rotation, which means they get a little bit of water in the spring on their wheat, and that's about it. I don't think they're so magnanimous that they're going to shut their circles down to satisfy the city, but they are shutting down. How's that?
Does Guama have an opinion or recommendation that toward the farmers that are pumping the deep wells?
Yes.
And that would be?
Get with the program as quick as you can. Current conditions are that the modified proposal, as many of us have been a part of negotiating in the last 11 months, suggests that as soon as the Bureau of Reclamation submits their EIS in February, and assuming it has a BC ratio of 1:1 or above, and assuming that the regional Bureau of Reclamation guru signs off on the EIS that there's no impact, yeah, we assumed all those things. That's done the first day it's submitted, right? Anyway, assume all that. The state of Washington then is going to then implement the modified plan proposal. And that basically means that where the current canal is capable of supporting the use of water at that location, that the growers will be able to form LIDs, and they will be able to capitalize. We now believe they will be able to capitalize the building of pump stations and pipelines at their own expense. And hypothetically, if all that would happen, theoretically, you know, and I'm being real theory, it won't happen, you could build pipelines and pump stations next spring if it was done. That won't happen, of course, bureaucracy doesn't move that fast, but it will. I think that the Office of Columbia River will expedite modified LID groups as rapidly as they can. Yes. And that's the first time I have been a part of a reasonable, realistic plan to make something happen. And the engineering that we have been exposed to suggests that the LIDs can build these for no more than $3,000 an acre, capitalized over 50 years. So that's an acceptable cost figure. Is that the answer you're asking for?
Kind of segues into, I'm trying to get to the urgency of this. Is some governmental agency going to rear its head and say, any wells that are used for farming, you shut them down because you're jeopardizing city water?
No. There's two or three reasons for that. One is the current water regulators in the Spokane DOE office have made it very clear in the past 10 years I've been involved that their public position is that they're going to wait until the water is used and then they don't have to worry about regulating it. That means all the wells are shut off. That's one thing. That's their public policy. Secondly is that a city does not have a senior water right. Western water law is in force here, and many of those old water rights precede your water rights. So unless you got some exemption from the state of Washington's legislature, if there were wells shut down, it would be in a chronological basis. And finally, I'm not sure that you really are aware of this, but a lot of the layers that Othello is currently using deeper are locked. I mean, the shallower layers have connection to the east. But once you get below about 600 feet, you have a really big dike to the east of you. And you have a fault to the north and a fault to the south and a pretty good dike to the west of you. The good news is you're the only people sucking out of this hole. The bad news is there is nobody else to shut off but you. So you are in a bit of a bathtub. And so the water you use is the water you use, and there really isn't a lot of other deep wells in this proximity besides you. So some of what happens to the east will have some effect to you, and some of it will not. Finish the story in June. How's that? Other questions about water issues?
Good questions. Anybody else? Amen?
Paul, have you guys, through your mapping, identified how far east dike or wall is? That's
generally,
down.
Yeah.
About how far?
Well, you want me to go out and put a stake in the ground where it's at, don't you? Well, the problem is we know what's on the other side of 17 and this side of Bruce. And the way things are, my guess is it's closer to 17 than it is to Bruce. But when it's 600 feet down and you can't find, there's no way to see it other than fly over with electromagnetic surveys, which leaves a 2 mile wide mark. That's the best I can do for you right now. I can't go out and tell you it's at Steel Road or Lee Master or exactly where it's at. I can just tell you it's on the other side of 17 and it's on this side of Bruce. And so there you go. If you went out and hooked up to this, one of the wells that are good at Bruce and transported in here, you probably have water longer than anybody, because that should be the bottom end of the bathtub. That's why there are static water levels 50 feet from the surface, hypothetically. So currently you're in a potable drinking zone. You don't have to treat your water, but you will soon not be able to supply your needs from that source. Okay?
One more before you go, while we have the expert. You talk about us being in a bowl. However, when I read the Pullman paper, they talk about the Wanapum Aquifer going through Pullman. And that's the same when we talk about going underneath us. That's quite a zone.
You weren't going to ask me questions I'd have to go off on, did you? The Wanapum layer of lava erupted, and there's actually 11 eruptions in the Wanapum layer, 12 layers. It actually spreads from Spokane and Pullman to Pendleton, across to Yakima, and clear out into the ocean past Portland 13 million years ago. And then things happened. The Frenchman Hills and Saddle Mountain popped up, and the ground went like this. And the Wanapums that you see over there are probably 10, 15 feet thick with about 1 or 2 foot layers of water. And the Wanapum you see here is 100 feet thick with 10 foot layers of water. And between here and there is the Steptoe Granite Buttes underground. The Steptoe that you know as an interesting tourist attraction is actually the top of a mountain chain that runs from, I don't know, east of Walla Walla up to about, Davenport. And the lava gets really thin other than right where it went through the valleys. And in many cases, when the lava erupted, it actually erupted and ran that way, because things were a lot more flat back then. And that's the edge of where the flow was. It was really thin, and it ran through the mountains. And so now, with all the earthquakes that have happened in the past 13 million years, the thin lava layers that you have on the other side of the Steptoes, right at the Steptoes, they're all broken up into little crumbles, and water can't get through. So the western side of Whitman County is pretty much really thin layers of the Wanapum that are broken up by earthquake faults, and no water comes this way. You know that because if you go out there to Ritzville, Harder area, whatever, well, there's no water connection between there and Whitman County. Did I answer that question for you?
Yes.
It is one of them. Yes.
But it's not flowing from Pullman under to Othello?
No, it is not.
Gotcha.
As a general rule, throughout the entire four counties, there is no new renewable water below about 200, 300 feet max. That's it. Everywhere. Ritzville, Harrington, Moses Lake, and everything below that is just old Ice Age water. Even the Black Sands. 70% of the water in the Black Sands is 10,000 years old. Okay?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I ask about the assessment response. I got nothing. So I respond, nothing. Nobody here is willing to say I want more taxes. But you didn't say no either, so I'll just leave
guess
it.
We're going to probably have to have you back and explain this to us a little better. Do you want to hear more about it right now, Council? Or what's this assessment you want to hit?
Don't we give to Guam already?
We do, but they're talking about a what you were saying here.
What do I do for
household? $5 per household assessment.
What's the question?
For Adams County.
Well, I assume there's something in our budget line is a donation to Guam.
No. There's been no contribution to Guam since day one. The reason is because the original county commissioners basically explained it very carefully. If you can't be persuasive enough to get the feds and the state to fund you, you go away. And that's been the reality for the last 14 years. So like I say, we've raised $16 million to do the things we've done. But it's become a little more challenging than just having a grassroots panel or option for us to discuss our water issues. We've now discussed the magnitude. We've now discovered the magnitude of our water resource scenarios. If you will look in your future role at Guama, there are 9 things on the second page that affects the cities and the counties that you must rely on. The knowledge of impairment of water and the reliability of water. Building permits will cease. Land divisions will cease. Without identifying the ability to have water impairment-free access to potable water in the counties. And Water Conservancy Board, water rights transfers. And I've known this for quite a few years, but in the last couple of 3 years, the level of knowledge we've achieved is in such a high magnitude above what the Department of Ecology, who wants to wait till your water's gone, and the United States Geological Survey has, that within about a year, we will have the specificity capability of being able to give impairments one well to another. Right now, we can do one region to another. But as we further the data, we'll do one well to another. We can tell you generally what areas have potable water available right now for domestic wells to be drilled. We can tell you areas where you can't and impair other people. We know the areas where there's water that's being recharged, and we know the ones that aren't. So right now what I'm doing is running around telling everybody that I find, that I know, that your water is not being recharged, telling you, you got about 10 to 15 years. You better figure out what you're going to do. I mean, that's what I'm doing. And in the same time, I'm trying to find solutions for those water groups that fall into that category, like the Odessa groups, the farmers, the Black Sands group. The city of Moses Lake's already negotiating with the Bureau of Reclamation. The orchard guys on the hills, Richmond Hills, who lost their water. Ladies and gentlemen, you are in the beginnings of an epic struggle to continue your dreams. And I don't like to say that. It's just nasty. But it's the truth. And you need to just, there are solutions. There are solutions you can afford. There are creative things. There's things I haven't thought about, I'm sure. Because I've thought of a lot more in the last year or two since I got started working on this. But you need a venue to vet these things out, work with your other cities, work with these farmers, get the farmers off the groundwater. Right now, I'm pretty sure there is no mechanism short of a Supreme Court ruling, you could get the farmers off the groundwater in time to save the low waters there. So I wouldn't be asking for a tax if I didn't think it was a pretty big deal, because I'm not particularly pro-tax myself. But I've been working on trying to get funding for this for, like I say, 15 years and been successful. It's pretty much not possible anymore. One of the reasons is because none of you have paid any money into this, and the states and Fed are starting to say, well, if they don't think it's important, then we don't think it's important. And, you know, that's the way it works.
So you're looking for a $5 per household?
That would be the rough estimation of how it would work out, and probably be a $100 and $200 assessment to the agricultural wells. That would be our original. But it would all go through a process of hearings and things, and that would be set. That's just a rough generalization. Yes.
Well, we can't vote on such a thing as this tonight because it's a workshop. But so you need approval from the council to assess it on Othello, the city of Othello? Is that what you're saying, to start looking
right
into
now?
It?
No.
No.
All I need you as a group is to sit here and nod your head to this fellow in the back of the room.
Oh.
This isn't a really negative idea, and they will pursue it from there. You don't have to take a vote. You just have to not jump up and down, wave a red flag, and tell him you're going to sacrifice him on the nearest telephone pole for doing it. No, that's really all we need to have is it a likely scenario that we as a region should have a Guama trying to figure out solutions, and should we participate in funding it? I would suspect that if we do, it will probably be to the tune of probably 50 cents on the dollar coming from the locals and 50 cents on the dollar coming from the state and feds. That's the way it usually works.
Okay. So what you're saying is, in order to get more money out of the feds and the state level, we'd probably have to chip in.
I'm not even going to deal with that. I've been raising money for a long time, and I've never had the privilege of having matching money, ever. And yet we've still raised $16 million to do this. I'm still around. I'm pretty good at it. The average general consensus is you'd rate 50 cents to their 50 cents under the table. I'll tell you, I wouldn't settle for that. We'll get more than that. So that's what the Guama does for you, basically, is gives you an entity to and cause that to happen. I'm a little bit surprised. Kittitas is trying to pass an aquifer protection area assessment so they can create a Guama, and Yakima is just got permission to, and these two areas, Yakima and Kittitas, and other areas around the state, have watched our Guama for a long time, and they all call me and say, can we be like you? And I don't have much response about that, but you have to work hard to do that. But other areas in the state with water issues are trying to emulate what we are, and yet with all the, with a $6 million model ready to answer all these responsibilities, we're on the verge of losing it. That's where we're at.
Ken?
Okay.
I got one more thing here.
Yeah.
I think that Guama has come a long ways, you know, in what, 12 years, 14 years, whatever it's been, and not asked anybody for any money locally. You know, they might have got a little money here and there, but basically they have went out on their own. They've gathered money from the state, a little from the federal, and back and forth. And I think they put on one hell of a project and accomplished a lot that people never see. You see something up here, that model he showed a while ago, yeah, it just looks like something floating out there. But you take the amount of work that went into that to develop that model, and you sit back and think, here we are in the Columbia Basin. We're supposed to have all the water that we need. We don't need any other water. But yet we're still pumping out of the deep. We're deep wells. You get the Midwest, they've been doing this, and they're running out of water. But we have stepped ahead, the as far as Guam is concerned, and we've looked at the future, see what we can do to change some of this. And people now are looking at Guam and say, well, how did you do that? How did you create that? And I think we're not only a step ahead in the state, but I think we're a step ahead in the nation on a lot of this stuff that's being developed and the technology that went into it to make it develop and make it happen. And I think it's time that some of the communities need to help them say, hey, this is a portion of our map to let you continue what you're doing. Because if we lost Guam and said, well, we don't need any state money, we don't need any federal money, and they just fold up, what do you got? All of this stuff they've accomplished and whatever just sets them up and goes by the wayside. And we can't let that happen. And if it takes $5 out of everybody's pocket, I don't think it's going to hurt anybody to make something like this as important as it is to create it and make it continue to happen.
I was asked by an elected official a week ago, can you just go away and give the model to the Department of Ecology? And I said, no. He said, why not? I said, well, first of all, it's the most complicated groundwater model ever built in the world. It's 35 million nodes, and each node is equal to a spreadsheet on Excel spreadsheet, and they all compute at the same time. And there are only two or three people in the world that can write the script to change it, one of them being the guy that I'm training in my office in Kennewick. I said, the Department of Ecology has exhibited no intention to participate in the future of our groundwater resource management at all. They have no intention of taking over this model. They have no intention of complicating their lives. And frankly, they don't have the they're not good enough to run the model if I gave it to them. I could hand it to them. I could even give them instructions and wouldn't be able to turn it on. So that's what would happen.
So
there you go.
So is the council interested in entertaining this thought?
Yes.
Is that a good way to put it, Eamon?
I'm sorry?
Is the council interested in entertaining this thought? Is that a good way to put it, or?
Yes. We need to take a look at this.
Correct.
We're not budgeted for it, but we need to come back and give some council some stats and parameters and what ifs and then vote on something.
So RCW 36 is the aquifer protection area assessment language, and that is the language which governs the mechanism for introducing an assessment for the support of this kind of activity.
Okay. Would be okay. Well, it sounds like, do I hear,
you want to entertain the thought of it?
Yes. Okay. We will entertain the thought. And we'll
you hear that, Roger?
I hear that. It's hard to hear here. I think it's time that we all stood up and take notice of just how valuable this water is to Adams County and to Ozell. We ran an EIS study the county paid for, and it's an economical impact study. It shows just exactly what our ground would be valued if we lost water. Right now, you can sell probably most irrigated property for $6,000 to $8,000 an acre. Rent right now on an average is $550 an acre for farm ground. That study with the research that we've done would probably be worth $500 to $600 an acre. We would lose our processing sheds. It'd be a huge impact. It's we're almost done a lot of research, and we come from nitrate levels to finding out now that there's very little recharge. I think it's time that we're going to have to help Guam. We've been to the feds, we've been to the states, and we're running out of resources. And I think now every one of us, if we run out of water and that tap runs dry, we'll wish maybe we paid $5 or $10 to find out a solution. So it's something we all need to think about.
Yeah, Roger, the council said they would look at this. I didn't know if you heard it or not, so I'll raise my voice up a little bit.
Any other questions I can't answer? Okay,
thanks, Paul, for your time, for coming.
Okay, Mike.
monthly investment report.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of council. This is the monthly report, and I'll just sit down and so I can pull it up here and go through it. What I've been doing is just adding month by month. This one is the local government investment pool. The interest rates are still horrible, but then that's kind of a picture, I think, nationwide and probably worldwide. So total for the year, if you can believe it, we've had, you know, on an average of over $3 million invested, and we've made $4,800.
Sheesh.
Typically, in the old days, if we were at 5% interest, which doesn't sound real high even, we would be making over $14,000 a month. And so that's kind of a picture of interest rates. We go down to the Bank of America, and I'll use the cursor here as we go down through this. Especially in these numbers here, where we had 9,400 and 8,300, these were those investments. That was a return on those investments that the state doesn't allow. We didn't realize we had at the time. So as you look down here now, September, October, you see how it's fallen off from $8,000 or $9,000 in a month to down to $6,000, and so we pretty much bottomed out. We've had a much better return on Bank of America, earning $194,000 through October on forgivable more invested, but certainly the return is much higher in the exchange rate. So that's a picture of our investments. And I think in the future, as I was sitting here, I was thinking, one thing I would like to do is I would like to prove to council that these numbers are accurate numbers. I'm going to start including reports run out of bias, and also do a tax report along with this. Because one of the things I want council to always be aware of exactly where we are cash-wise and investment-wise, so that at the end of the year when we say, here's what our ending fund balance is, you know what that's made up of, and you know it's accurate because we've been talking about it every month. I think that's really important when you're making decisions. So I'll start doing that in the future as well. I'll include copies of these reports and also where we stand cash wise. Are there any questions?
Mark, go ahead.
I just want to get a clear picture. The first investment was with the state.
Up here?
Yeah.
The state investment pool? Wow.
And that's 3.3, so that's 5. So we have $7-8 million invested right now.
We're right around 8 million. In fact, I think for the end of November, we do have over $8 million invested.
And what is that money? What's the 8 million from? What makes up that 8 million?
Well, typically from reserve funds, like, for instance, at the end of this year, we're going to have, like, $3 million in the sewer reserve fund. At the end of 2012, we'll have $1.7 million in the water reserve fund. That's kind of, we have the smaller funds that are reserves as well that have $300,000 in them, like the real estate excise tax fund. Street reserve fund, etc. The general fund, we carry on average over $1 million in fund balance in that fund at all times. So that's kind of the makeup of it.
So these are the balances of both what I refer to as the checking accounts and the reserves, the savings accounts.
Yeah. This year doesn't include checking. This is just simply investments. But what I was saying earlier is that what I'm going to start doing is, and I'll give you our cash position as well as our investments in the future so that you can see the full picture. I'm trying not to carry a lot of cash because it got kind of burned during the economic crisis. We have a guarantee from the bank, you know. I'm trying to think of the name of that right now, but during the economic crisis, the federal government passed a law that said that we had to start paying for insurance. insurance over that $200,000 or $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the cost of keeping our money in the bank just went just like this, and so it's better now if I don't keep money in the bank. It's, even though the interest rates, like you say, in the LGIP is really, really low, at least I don't have to pay to keep it in there, and that's what was happening with U.S. Bank.
Well, I just want council to know when I left, we had $8 million.
Not fair. Yeah. Any other questions for Mike? Nope. Okay, committee reports. Do we have any committee reports tonight? Unfinished business? I guess I'd like to just bring up a couple things. We're having, well, like Eric come in tonight asking for money, and we've got, of course, the Sandhill Crane Festival asking for help, and who knows, you know, we're starting to see a pattern where people are coming. I guess as a council, we need to think about how we're going to handle that, because I guess in my view, do we start charging back for services? Because as a, you know, we're giving them money. I mean, just throwing things out to think about is what I'm doing here. You know, how, because if we're going to be setting a policy as we move forward here, and in our minds we've got to think how that policy is going to be. So are we going to open up the checkbook and start writing checks? Or, you know, it does create an issue for the city. And my worry would be that everybody start looking for the city as the answer to their issues and their problems. And we can't do it. We just don't have the ability. You know, we need the whole community involved, the businesses, you know, the organizations, the other citizen groups that are out there, you know, all of us working together to make each one of these organizations, you know, make it and be successful and see our city grow and prosper. And so as a council, I guess I'm you know, saying let's think about this. How are we going to handle this? Because, you know, we're seeing that more and more people because it's hard times to get money. And, you know, I understand why they're coming. And they're great organizations, and I'm for them. I want to see them succeed and keep going forward because we need them. So I'll be thinking about that. Another thing I would like to have a letter drawn up for the Planning Commission and have the council members and I sign it, thanking them for all their hard work, for what they do for the city. Is everybody okay with that? I'd like to drop a letter for them and just, you know, because they do a lot of work. I mean, this is a big, we're going to get to see how big this really is in the next months to come, and what they've drawn up and put together for us. And, you know, they're a volunteer group. And, you know, we need to thank them for that. Another one. We talked about this before, but I want to bring this back to the council again about... when a council member brings up wanting something from the city or the Amen, let me think if I can think of a topic. I want you to research why the Christmas trees are only 10 feet tall. You know, one of the council members, let's say. We'll just throw this out. You know, then we want at least three council members to say, yes, I want to hear that. I would like to get back to that because each one of you can generate different things for the city to do and keep the people busy. And it may not really be that important, and it may be, but... You know, we'd like to see the council, as a general rule, at least three people say, yes, I'd like to see that happen. Let's find out and then report back to us or put, you know, notes in your files or whatever it is. But, you know, we've talked about it in the past and you all said yes. So I'd like to try to move back to that as we're talking. So that way we have a consensus that, yes, that's really important to the city and finding out more about it. So anything else on unfinished business?
Well, relative to your last comment, mm-hmm. Anybody can come in with a public disclosure and ask staff to get anything. So,
correct.
Mm-hmm.
So the government at this time really doesn't care how much time or resources it takes to get that information. So I would think the council should consider that they be afforded the same opportunity. And if the staff wants us to start filling out public disclosures, I'd be fine with that if they want a record of what we asked for. But we're elected citizens, we're still citizens and are privy to that information.
Okay, now when we had talked, you said you'd like to have three people. I mean, if that's, you want to change how we're doing it, that's up to you, council, so.
Why we should do that.
Am I not very clear what I'm saying?
When did you guys talk about this before?
I don't know, it's been 3 months ago or so we brought it up. I don't really know. I couldn't tell you for sure.
Is there that much stuff that comes up that?
Amen. Is there that much you get involved in it?
What the policy and procedure indicates is that, and this isn't a public records request, Mark, at all. It's what does the council want to work on? For example, a council member says, I want to paint the streets in Othello purple. Well, do the rest of the council want the staff to work on that and bring it back to you or not? And so that would take a consensus of the council to say, yeah, I like that idea, or no, I don't. But it's the majority of the council that then directs the mayor to have the staff do work. As we've been kind of bouncing along here a little bit, one council member will say something and nobody else will say yes or no, and then we kind of feel obligated to do that work and get it done and back to the council. But does the whole council want it or not? That was the issue. Does the council by majority want something looked at, researched, brought back or not? And you did that a couple times tonight when the Guama Association asked, do you want to fund them? You said, well, let's take a look at that and bring it back to us. That's the issue. It has nothing to do with public records.
Okay.
It's just by majority does the council want to direct the mayor to have staff work on something and bring it back. And you also did that with the Planning Commission issue tonight. You, by majority consensus on that, said, yeah, tell the Planning Commission we want you to work on the itinerant vendor issue. That's all it is.
Yeah, I
apologize. Yeah. That wasn't very clear. So.
Yeah, because say I would want come up with I want all the street lights on Main Street to be flashing yellow, and right. They spend 3 hours analyzing that and doing research, and it's so bizarre, you know, that it doesn't do it. It's just a waste of their time. So that I agree. There's some
right.
kind of consensus is
exactly.
when you're expending. But if somebody requests per se a record,
anybody can get those.
That's
you
know. Given. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You weren't crystal clear.
I wasn't
on that.
But I apologize.
But
I get
talking about direction in like work.
Yeah. More policy related.
Request for information. More information.
You and any citizen have the right to come in and ask for anything you want as a document. If we have it, we have an obligation to provide that. But I was just, and I think the mayor was saying, that direction of the majority of the council to work on an issue and bring it back to council. And instead of one person just raising an issue, and then the council would say, does the majority of the council want this issue researched? But as Councilmember Spohr said, staff spends time putting things together to enable you to make a decision. And if the majority of the council doesn't want to look at an issue, we shouldn't spend time doing that. It's just if the council wants it, we're going to do it.
A lot clearer. Do you want to stay with that then? Similar to that? Okay. Yes? Okay.
I think most of the time if you come up with an idea, you'll journey around the council anyway, and you've got
mm-hmm.
two or three people here who will make up their mind, well, yeah, yes or
right.
no, and then they can take it and run with it. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's just common sense. That's the way we generally operate. But,
good. New business. No new business? Okay. Mayor's announcements. The swearing in of elected officials will be at our December 12th meeting. Number two, DOT will present drawings of the First Avenue Highway 26 project at our December 12th meeting also. The quarterly Adams County Mayor's Luncheon, this is quarterly here where the other mayors and stuff, other people show up, is Wednesday, December 14th at noon at the Othello Senior Center, and anybody's invited if they want to come. And if you are donating items to the ACFD number 5, Adams County Fire District number 5 Christmas basket, you can bring them either to the police department by December 15th or to the fire department. Baskets will be delivered on December 17th. Any other announcements we're not aware of? Okay, this workshop is over.